We're doing the Ein Yaakov. We're up to Daf Samach Aleph in the Gemara Brachos, which is in the standard editions of the Ein Yaakov, Daf Tzadik Tes Amud Beis. We were up to the amazing story of Rabbi Akiva, and we learned about Yeshu's father, Pappus ben Yehuda. He wasn't really his father, but he was married to Yeshu's mother. And we learned about how the Romans had decreed that no one should teach Torah publicly, and Rabbi Akiva went out and taught Torah publicly, and they were going to torture him to death. So they took Rabbi Akiva out, and he was 120 years old. They started taking off his flesh, skinning him alive. They took these metal combs to scrape off his flesh, and as they're taking off his flesh, he sees the time, and he starts saying Shema with love. And his students look at him, and they say, Rabbi, this far? And he said to them, my whole life I was pained. This pasuk says in Kriya Shema, love Hashem with all your soul. Even when he's taking your soul, you have to be capable of loving him. And I said, when will I have an opportunity to fulfill that? And now that I have that opportunity, I won't do it. Now, there's a lecturer named Jonathan Kellerman. I think he's a Harvard graduate. He wrote a few good books. He wrote, what's it called? Maybe Permission to Believe. He wrote another one about raising children. Forgot what it's called. So he once gave a class where he gave the following allegory to understand this Gemara. Imagine a girl goes to school, and in 6th or 7th grade, she decides that she wants to be a doctor. So she starts getting perfect grades. When all the kids are out playing, she makes sure to have all her homework done, finish all her tests, make sure she's ready for everything. And from that day onward, she aces everything. She's valedictorian of her class. Throughout high school, other kids are out playing ball. She's getting books on medicine and books on biology and acing chemistry and ensuring that she has the top grade. And she aces high school. And then she applies to medical school. She applies to the top medical school. And her application is rejected. She goes to the senator. She starts moving politicians, knocking on doors. She's working summer jobs to put together the money. Every free minute she has, she's studying. She applies a second time. A second time she's rejected. She applies some more political pressure. She prepares herself some more. And finally, the third time, she's accepted. Pre-med, she's working. She's working 18 hours a day. She doesn't stop to breathe. She doesn't stop to eat normal meals. She barely takes time to shower. She finishes her first year of pre-med, second year, third year. Finally, she enters medical school. She's working her head off. Where everyone else takes a weekend off, she takes an extra weekend to advance. And she's working and she's working. And finally, after years of devotion and dedication, she gets her diploma. And the day comes and she walks into the ward. She's going to be a cardiologist, a surgeon of cardiology, and she enters the ward, and there's tremendous pressure. They cut open the man's chest, and they start pulling this, pulling that, bring this, bring that, and there's tremendous pressure in that room. And they finish their open-heart surgery, and she comes out, and she takes off her mask, and there are beads of sweat coming down her face. And a nurse stands next to her and says, Doctor, you've been working for 36 hours straight. There's another patient that needs to go in now. You want to cooperate? And she says, yeah. And she pulls the mask back down and she goes to get her scrubs. And the nurse says to her, Doctor, you've been working 36 hours straight. You had two snacks in the middle and zero sleep in the middle. Why do you want to do this? So she turns to the nurse and she looks at her and she says, are you kidding? My whole life I've been working to reach this point. I'm living my dream. This is what I wanted my whole life. Now I finally made it. So of course I'm happy to go in there. I'll do another operation, no problem. This is what I've been working on my whole life. Now I finally made it. That's Rabbi Akiva. The students ask him, Rabbi, this far? They're skinning you to death and you're still saying Shema? Rabbi Akiva says, wait a second. My whole life I've been working. My whole life I've been trying to see if I can perfect my connection with Hashem that I always said when the Torah...
When he started, when he was
40, fine.
He's only half his
life. Okay, 2/3 of his life. But he says...
How old was he?
120. Okay. So, this is what I've been working for. Ever since I did tshuva, I've been working to perfect my connection with Hashem. I always said, if the Torah says you have to love him with all your soul, that means even if they're taking your soul, you have to be prepared to love him now. And it's not only that. As we discussed last time, love is about giving. And you're going to see that the more you love, the more you want to give. And the more you want to give, sometimes you just wish you could give more. Rabbi Akiva says, I'm going to die anyways. But now I'm dying in the ultimate way. I'm giving the most I could give. So of course I can say Shema now. Remember the story of Pappus and Lilianus. What did Pappus say when the Romans came to execute him? Pappus said to the Romans, I would have died anyways. God has many wild animals in the world. One of them is the Romans. So I'm dying at the hands of the Romans. Rabbi Akiva obviously knew that too. So Rabbi Akiva says, this is my opportunity. And he, Haya ma'arich be'echad, ad she'yatzata nishmato be'echad. He was saying, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And as he concluded the Echad, the declaration that Hashem is one, that's when his soul went out. Yatzata bat kol v'amara, a heavenly voice came out and said, Ashrecha Rabbi Akiva, praise are you Rabbi Akiva, she'yatzata nishmatcha be'echad, that your soul came out as you declared Hashem was one. Amru malachei asharet lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the angels in heaven, they weren't appeased. So the heavenly voice comes out, Rabbi Akiva, he's okay with it, but the angels come before God, and they said, Ribono shel olam, master of the world, Zu Torah v'zo sechara. This is the wages he gets for all the Torah he's learned. Amru, mimtim yadcha Hashem, mimtim mecheled. You Hashem, you caused or you allowed this death to transpire. Amar lahem chelkam b'chayim. So Hashem answers them. Hashem says, they said, Mimtim Hashem, the people who are killed, Mimtim Yadcha, we expect that you would take his life, not let him die at the hands of these savage creatures. Hashem said, Chelkam b'chayim. Their portion is in life, it's not over. Their portion is yet to come. Yatzata bat kol v'amera lo, a heavenly voice came out and said to him, Ashrecha Rabbi Akiva, Shatam zuman l'chaya olam haba. Praise to you, Rabbi Akiva. You are hereby invited to the world to come. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Akiva. Pam achat nichnasti achar Rabbi Yoshua lebet hakise, v'lamati menu shlosha dvarim. Rabbi Akiva says, I once followed Rabbi Yoshua to see how he arranges his bathroom. Remember, in those days they had outhouses, so people had to set up their own bathroom. So Rabbi Akiva says, I learned from him three things in the way he set things up. Lamati she'en ifnim mizrach u'maharav, ela tzafon v'dorom. So when a person goes to the bathroom, if they're in a place, this Gemara is difficult. He says, I learned that a person going to the bathroom should face north or south, not east or west. So that was in their bathrooms. V'lamati she'en ifnim mu'umad ela miyushav, and that a person should sit down. He shouldn't be standing when he relieves himself. V'lamati she'en mekanchin b'imin ela b'smol, And I learned that the hand the person should use when he cleans himself is his right hand and not his left. Amalo ben Azai, so Rabbi Ben Azai, Rabbi Shimon Ben Azai said to him, Kokach hasta panecha b'rabcha, don't you think you went too far? You went and you followed everything he did to that degree? Amalo Torah v'lilmod ani tzarich. He said, well, I got to learn Torah. So I did everything I could to learn Torah. So, here we have to understand, when we read this Gemara, it's hard for us to swallow. In order to understand this better, we have to understand the level of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yoshua, and Ben Azai. We'll discuss this on two levels. Who's the greatest person you know? Who's the biggest sage living today? Who would you, if you had to give grades, who would you put in the top row? Who do you think is the finest person in the last century, let's say? Okay, let's not say today. Okay, within the last 100 years. Rav Eliyahu, Chafetz Chaim. Who? The Rebbe of Chabad. Okay, we have all kinds of different votes here. Take that person, whoever you imagine, what? Okay.
Rav Cook and the Rebbe of Chabad.
Okay. So, take whichever one you choose. Multiply them about 50 times. And you have a Rishon, someone that lived 500 years ago.
Yeah.
Take that and multiply that about 50 times, and you have an Amora. You have someone who lived in the times of the Gemara. Now take that and multiply it about 20 times, and you have a Tana. You understand how distant they are from where we are? I mean, anyway, if we try to understand the Chafetz Chaim, the Rebbe, who did you say? Rav Eliyahu, they're beyond us. But the Amoraim were, the Rishonim were beyond them. And the Amoraim were beyond the Rishonim. And the Tanoim were beyond the Amoraim. Let's take a small example. When Abaye used to learn, so he'd sometimes crouch down on his thumbs, and he was so focused in his learning that his thumbs would start bleeding and he didn't notice. So we all know the story about whichever Rav it was that they closed the door and he was reaching for a seatbelt and they closed the door on his hand and he didn't say a word until the car pulled away so as not to embarrass the person who closed the door on his hand. Who was it? I heard it about different people, so I don't know anymore who it was. But it happened. Who it happened to, I don't know.
It's a little crazy.
Depends on what level a person's on. On his level, there wasn't... How could he yell? How could he embarrass the person? How could he hurt a person's feelings? It wasn't a possibility. So, I could tell you a story I saw.
But his hand was already safe?
His hand was okay. It was just hurting very badly. He didn't lose his hand. I was once with the rabbi... Big Talmud Chacham. And he was sitting down and I was frying for the first time and I borrowed his frying pan. And I didn't know that when you fry, you need a low flame. So I turned it on a high flame, first time I'm frying. And suddenly I see the pot's burning. So I put in too much oil, this much oil, thick oil. And I'm burning his frying pan, so I ran to the sink. And what did I do? Turn on the cold water. I turned on cold water into boiling hot oil. Bam! Exploded. Okay, so now, I don't know what percentage hit this rabbi in the back of his neck. Boom. And the rest, I mean, flew all over and part on me. So, in 1 second, he jumped off his chair and ran and grabbed my hand and took me to the sink and he's asked me, are you okay, are you okay? And as he's taking me and trying to take care of me, I'm thinking, didn't he get most of the oil? Was I imagining it? Didn't most of the oil just go splattering on the nape of his neck? And I asked him, and he said, no, I'm okay, no, everything's, you know. so that, There are big people in this world. I remember that we were in an apartment, and he used to sleep.
But didn't feel safe, I'm not for myself, only for
me. Right.
Is that the first thing he says?
But for some people...
This is the same first of all, if I'm not for well, he first says I'm not for myself.
Right.
That's how we show, you know?
Granted. But some people are on that level that this is part of their being for themselves. They care about someone else, and that's very, very, very important to them.
Right.
And for themselves, like I said, if he'd lose his hand, I'm sure he would have done something. He didn't lose the usage of his hand. I could tell you stories all night. At any rate, so when we speak about it, we're talking about people that, to them, Torah was so important, every nuance of doing things right, that things were on a much higher level. We learn it, so to us, it's like, wait a second, why are you discussing this? And why are you going into such details following your Rebbe? But for them, things were on a much higher level.
It was, so the self-preservation is not their highest... because don't they have to preserve themselves to they're spreading the Torah and doing the Torah?
For sure.
Value themselves.
For sure, but you're not talking about something that was lethal. You're talking about something that was hurtful. So then someone else's pain weighed by them more than their own physical pain.
The instinct of preserving yourself, even if you're hurt, that instinct should kick in. No?
I don't know. I think for a minute. You'll be a parent, Bezrat Hashem, on Yom Kippur, and your children will need food. You're not going to be thinking about the food you need to eat and you're hungry. You'll be feeding your kids on Yom Kippur. And if you have a wife that needs to be in bed and needs to be taken care of, you're going to be taken care of her. And even though you're hungry and it's self-preservation, but right now that's your focus. And Matzah Yom Kippur, so also I think that part of what we try to develop is that even though we have to preserve ourselves whenever possible, we care very much for someone else. I think that's... part of what the Torah trains us to do, that caring for someone else. So, yeah, self-preservation is true. But there's also that level of caring. And I don't think they're exclusive. I think they're complementary.
There comes a level with some of these, some of these people where they're so absolutely vital to Hashem that self-preservation is going to get... God says, go do this, they're going to go do it, regardless of any self-preservation.
God doesn't talk to people like the... go do this. What are you talking about? When was the last time God told you to do something? That's all in the theory.
Okay.
In practice, God doesn't help but do it.
You know, there are people on a level, like our cook in the laboratory, whose essence is so vital, but it's not me and not you.
There's a level of care that every one of us should aspire to, where we really, really care about someone else. I agree that it doesn't come naturally. I agree that a person begins being egocentric, and as a person develops, he's supposed to be able to see more and more what other people feel. We originally don't even sense what other people feel. A person has to work on himself to sense it and to care for it. Our nature is that we like slapstick comedy. Many people will see someone else stub their toe and burst out laughing. Yes, that's a part of our nature, but it's a cruel part of our nature, which we want to overcome and develop and sensitize ourselves to other people's feelings. And the greater a person is, the more he cares for other people. Okay.